O'Reilly Auto Parts, man, they are in the business of keeping your car on the road. They offer friendly and helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. You know the jingle?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do the jingle at the end of this.
Nice. I can't wait for it.
Yeah. So listen. Listen to the end. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free, in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your car. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you'll find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they're friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com. That's O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly's Auto Parts.
Ow!
You better put that in there.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Following is a production of Dirty Mo Media. There he is. Come on in here, buddy. Have a seat. Hey, everybody. Glad you tuned in. It's time for another episode of the Dale Jr. Download. Mike Davis, Dale Earnhardt Jr.
in the
Bojangle Studio. We've got a great guest today. Well, how you doing, Red?
I'm doing fine right now.
This They're is every like, week, okay, bud? Buckle in.
Yeah.
You died on that hill. Yeah. Your career died on that hill, and you were hard-headed. You're a bigger idiot. I didn't even think about it. No. You thought about it and didn't ask.
That makes me the bigger idiot.
I think so. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Dale Jr. Download. It is our Wednesday show in the Bojangle Studio. With me again today is my sister, Kelly. How you doing, Kelly?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for being here today.
Absolutely.
Had a lot of fun yesterday, some fun conversation. Today, we got a great guest coming in here, a definite ally for episode 500. It's Johnny Morris, the owner of Bass Pro Shops. Johnny has obviously been a huge supporter with his Bass Pro Shops brand in NASCAR, working with Dad initially years ago. He helps us here at Junior Motorsports. Has sponsored Noah Gragson, Josh Berry. I'm driving the Bass Pro Shop car this weekend at Homestead. He also sponsors our late model stock program with Carson Quapple and also Wyatt.
That's right.
Miller. Yeah, so Wyatt the Thriller Miller, racing the dirt tracks around the country. So, anyways, I'm excited to talk to Johnny. I know you are, too. You have a great relationship with him already. I speak to him a lot from time to time. I think you know him just a little bit better than I do, but due to your, you know, having to talk to him about the business of motorsports.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'm super excited to hear from him. Just, you know, he's certainly had a history in this career, a history with our family. Business-wise, I've got to experience, you know, a lot of the different things and places, and I'm gonna be anxious to hear about just, you know, his vision, how it all came together.
I know.
It's just so massive. You know?
He's built this iconic brand, and it's always fun to talk to people about like how small it used to be. You know, what are the origins of Bass Pro Shop, and I think people will be entertained to hear exactly how it did start.
Yeah,
and you know, he just. You know, he just is a fun guy, really incredibly genuine, nice, polite, soft-spoken man.
Yeah.
but he certainly knows what the hell he wants, right? Like behind all of that.
And he gets done what he wants.
Yeah, behind all of that, he's very effective.
Yeah, he's very driven.
You know, in the way he operates. So it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to him. Can't wait to get started. So let's bring him into the room. Get Johnny Morris on the Dale Jr. Download.
There he is.
There he is.
What's up, buddy?
Beautiful day. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here.
There's your hot seat. Yes, sir. Put your headphones on. Get to it. Got your notes ready. So Johnny Morris is on the Dale Jr. Download today. Johnny is the owner of Bass Pro Shops and a great friend of everybody. I mean, you're a friend of ours and a friend of everybody else in the industry. You've been involved in NASCAR in so many ways over the years. We'll cover that today. But thanks for coming. Thanks for giving us some time. I know you're busy.
It's an honor. I've been so looking forward to this, and just going through old scrapbooks of memories, pictures of your dad, and fun times, you know,
yeah.
And the impact you, Dale, and your dad, Kelly, your family has had, not only on our family, but helping us build our brand,
yeah.
Bass Pro Shops and the outdoors and conservation and just fun, happy times. It's
right.
An inspiration for everybody in our company for many years.
Well, let me ask you, so I want to understand how you ended up building this brand, but what was your childhood like?
My childhood, I was kind of blessed because very blessed. My mom and dad, just like, you know, your family had passion for something, and we live in a country where we can be free to pursue our passions. And my mom and dad, they grew up in a little town, Willard, Missouri. They were both born in 1911. They didn't have much. My mom was one of 10 kids that grew up in a two-bedroom house. My dad was raised by his great aunt. But to them, they were rich because they woke up every day and they could hunt and fish, and they raised me and my sisters. There's an area called, there in Ozarks, it's referred to as a float fishing capital world, just beautiful streams. And so I grew up fishing. I grew up loving to fish on the rivers. And then when I was 10, they built Table Rock Lake. And I went to open house with my grandpa. He was pretty upset because it flooded his best fishing holes. I can't repeat what he said, but he was not happy. But what we didn't understand, it created habitat, and then the fishing became great. So when I was like 21, I fished in the first national bass tournament, and I met fishermen from all over the country, and I just knew I wanted to be around the sport of fishing and try to be in the fishing business if I could.
Yeah.
My dad had a liquor store on the way to the lake, so I went, there was a Gibson discount store there in Springfield, and they had a good selection of gear. But I kept going in, that manager, I was a good customer, and he said, John, I can't get permission from the home office to carry all these lures, like Bill Dance and rolling all these fishermen were using. So then I talked my dad into put tackle in the store, and we just called it Bass Pro Shops.
So the first Bass Pro Shop was a liquor store with tackle.
Yep.
And where was it?
It was in Springfield, Missouri on South Camel, and that store was about the size of a lobby, like in Concord. It was 1,500 square feet, and that was our only store for the first 13 years we were in business.
13 years, that was the store.
Yep.
So as when the first week, right, what do you got? Just like a rack of lures that your dad gave you, this little corner over here, or what?
Yeah, pretty much. So I had this buddy of mine, Steve Reed, a fishing buddy, and he worked at a convenience store. So I talked Steve into coming to work with me. My dad is interesting. He didn't loan me the money, but he co-signed my note at the bank because he wanted me to know the obligation, mm-hmm. the responsibility. So we got $10,000 and I got a U-Haul trailer. We went over to Tulsa. There's a little shop, Okie Bug, and they wholesale out of the back door. So we filled that up and put a padlock on it, went out on the town honky-tonking. We came back. The trailer is still there because that would have been the end
of
the company before
it
started.
Yeah.
So that would have been a bad decision.
Yeah. Anyway, everything worked out. So we just, like I said, we called it Bass Pro because it was real descriptive. We wanted to just be specialists in bass fishing gear.
Okay.
Okay.
And so you brought all that stuff back to the liquor store.
Yep.
And how much room did you initially have in the store? What was your footprint?
We had two gondolas that, I don't know, it was probably half the size of this room, if that. And I love this room, by the way, on the podcast. It's a very friendly place here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. All right. So,
yeah, oh, yeah. So, was it like day to day? You just in there selling fishing lures in the back
day,
of the store?
Every
yeah. Because you're in your 20s, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, yeah. And every time we'd run tackle on sale or lures, and he'd sell some more bear, but we kept pushing this bear over and putting more bait in there.
I was going to say, after 13 yeah. years, how yeah. much space did you have?
Yeah. Well, we started a catalog a okay. couple of years later, and that's how our business really started to grow, was more catalog and still just had that one shop.
Yeah.
In the 70s, starting a catalog.
When, what was the moment when the alcohol left the building?
It never did.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we moved down the street.
Right.
And, opened up. It was kind of ironic, Dale, because that Gibson's discount store, many years later, it came up for sale. And
yeah.
so we bought that. It was 80,000 square feet. So we had moved our warehouse in there. We had a store that was 20,000 feet. So
yep.
that, and then we had a big window. Customers could see their orders being filled in the back, and had our offices, everything. So that's where our headquarters store, where you've been, you guys, before us. That's where it is today. We
yes.
just added on to it over the years.
Okay. What's become of the original building?
It's still down there, and we took part of it and recreated a little replica museum of the original store.
Yeah.
And every time there's some important meeting in their company, I love to go in there and just stand behind the counter. It stirs a lot of emotion, like where yeah. did we come from and how important it is to listen to customers, whether you want to or not, and for
yeah.
your people. So it's still there. It's part of our little museum.
Yep. How do you, you know bass fishing, you know lures, you're I imagine in the first handful of years, you felt confident in and around all of those things, but eventually your store footprint grows, you're bringing in other brands, you're offering other services and products, hunting products, and just continuing to grow as a business, right? I mean, how do you, how do you manage that and not make, I guess you make mistakes, but how do you manage it and succeed without failing, because it could have went either way, right? Where there's some moments,
yeah.
I guess, when things were touch and go.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
And so I come here and I see you have your family here, right? It's mm-hmm. your personal family and your work family. And that's to say how important that is. And I, sitting across from you, Kelly, I wish I would have invited my sister Susie mm-hmm. because I have three sisters. Two of them were involved with the business
okay.
for a long time. And like my youngest sister Susie, she's real sharp. Like every time we'd get report cards for years, I'd always tell my parents, well, wait till she gets in the third grade. Wait till she gets in the fifth grade. Wait.
Yeah.
All the way up. She's real smart. She uh-huh. came in one day, and we had all of her mailing lists was on this old machine called the Dressograph, these little labels. And they're just falling out of boxes all over the floor. She's, Johnny, if you're going to be serious about this, these are your customers. You're just losing their name. You've got to get your inventory on a computer and your customer list on a computer. So I said, okay, you do it. You just... And so she came to work and helped us, and some of her systems she put in place still service, and my other sis. So a lot of family involvement, and you can't beat it.
Yeah.
I mean, some days it's like this, but
yeah.
It's the best. When you come down, where's the loyalty? It's like your family. And you ask Dale about how's our company grow. It's like a work family, and just the blessing of having a lot of people with a shared passion, whether it's here at racing, us with the outdoors, that's about everything.
Yeah. What was it? What was the opening up the second location a big intimidating? I mean, there's moments when you got to basically reinvest, right? You take money you're making in your brand and your company, and you have to turn around and if you're going to get somewhere, you got to put it all right back in, right? And so, imagine opening another store or growing your business. There were some moments where you had to reinvest big capital into your brand. Were those moments intimidating at all?
Oh, yes, but I mean, it's like racing. Like, there's a time you got to go for it,
yeah.
And so our second store was in Atlanta, and I got a call from a realtor, and there was a concept grocery store called Fresh Festival, and it had gone out of business. And, man, I thought, man, it was a great location on I-85, and but it was just a box. It was like, and our main headquarters where you've been in Springfield, we had invested in a lot of attractions, you know, like waterfalls, aquariums, indoor archery ranges, things that take better care of the customers. We call that store Outdoor World. Well, we are going to Atlanta. We debated, okay, do we do like Sam Walton, just go to smaller markets, not so intense competition? Mm-hmm. But for Bass Pro at the time, our catalog customers, Atlanta was like a hotbed of fishing in the Southeast, you know, and it was, we knew that as a hub, so we just figured, hey, let's go for it, because if we win, we could win really big. We'll just see how we fare there. And we didn't have the money to make that store like Springfield. I didn't want to disappoint customers, so we called that store Bass Pro Shop Sportsman's Warehouse. And we had murals and we had some mounts, but it wasn't quite the same but as our headquarters. But we had the gear, you know, yeah. And good people. And I felt like the biggest challenge would be the people, you know, like, because we'd been operating this store for like in our headquarters over 20 years. And we built a great team. So how do you have people behind the counter that are knowledgeable when it comes to fishing or hunting or anything to do with what around our business and taking care of customers? And really surprising that people, we attracted people because of their passion. That's the kind of people yeah. you want, you know, from managers all the way up and down the troop. So that kind of, and we transferred some people that had been with us for a long time, but our ability to attract fellow sportsmen to come and serve other people that love the outdoors, that was surprising how many good people we could get.
The success of the Atlanta store gives you all this confidence to continue to go into new markets.
Yes, sir.
You know, most people, when they're setting out in the retail business, it's like the square footage and how much sales you can make out of the square footage, and they want to just turn and rotate everything. You built these Bass Pro Shops, and you say the Atlanta store didn't mimic the Springfield store. At what point and how did you decipher and know that it was going to work to build destinations for your shoppers that are outside of that retail dollar? You know, because when you go in a Bass Pro Shop, you can have all kinds of fun without ever spending a dime.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being customers, too. So that's a very good question. My sister Susie, I mentioned earlier, we heard about this store in Freeport, Maine, L.L. Bean. Mm-hmm. So we take a field trip there, and I couldn't believe it. And it was a big, giant store. And all these people, they were getting several million people a year to come through this store. And that's what really inspired me. Like, if they can draw that many people to Freeport, Maine, we can draw a lot of our catalog customers to Springfield, Missouri, relatively yeah. small town. But we had, our catalog sales were good, and we built up some, a good, healthy balance yeah. sheet. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to go to the bank and just say, what's the payback on this aquarium? We just wanted a store to be a daydream store for our customers, you know, yeah. and just a fun place. And so in 1988, we had this event called the World Fishing Fair mm-hmm. and had all the pro anglers. And like you guys came to yeah. the mm-hmm. to a similar event. Mm-hmm. But, man, we had like 250,000 people come in 3 days. And they paid actually $10 to get in the store. But we gave it all to conservation. But anyway, that put that store on the map for sure. And investing in the fun aspects of the store has been very popular. I think a uniqueness that mm-hmm. we have that our customers enjoy. And part of it's educational, you know, for kids and conservation messages and just a fun place.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So just recently I had Hank Parker Sr. on the show, who is a professional bass fisherman, and you fished professionally as well for 5 years?
Yes, sir.
Obviously, starting that business takes a lot of your time. You got to commit. You quit fishing professionally and you know, made the right decision, right? You're sitting here in front of us with a successful business in Bass Pro Shops. But how difficult was it to, I mean, there's a competitiveness that you probably missed fishing competitively and trying to go out there and be the best bass fisherman you could be. So what was your experience like and how easy or hard was it to really kind of like stop doing something that you really love to do?
That's a very good question. Those were without question the happiest days of my life. Get in my truck, pull my boat, drive around, see America, you know, driving around, fly over things now too much, but just that was great. But also the competition, and it's just like you're racing for automotive and making advancing equipment. It put me right in the forefront of all what was happening. And Ray Scott, that started these tournaments, the founder of BASS, he was a great promoter and marketer, and he was building heroes, just like your dad, others, legends in racing, yourself. Heroes were emerging, and I would go to these tournaments. I'd take a little Kodak camera or something, I'd get a picture of whoever won. I'd go to the vendor and say, hey, let's have a special. So we put out little tabloids or bulletins to our customers, right, like a tournament bulletin. So, man, here's the hottest gear. Here's what you need. And here's a great price on it. And, you know, the other buyers at Walmart or wherever it might be months before they even know about this. Yeah. Or, you know, like it gave us, by going to those tournaments, kept us real close to our customers and close to the developing gear.
Yeah, that was a real competitive advantage there.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun too.
That opens up some curiosities for me. So, what is changing? Take us back to, you know, the late 70s and early 80s. What is changing about lures? What is change? How in the same vein of how technology and racing changes, right? What was really, really good last month is obsolete 6 months from now. How are y'all improving success for your customers, and how are lures themselves evolving?
You always got to have the latest, greatest. So always guys got to get new gear. Girls got to get new gear. One thing that's a constant that is amazing is like the importance of conservation and how – can kids, like especially kids, go catch fish?
Yeah.
And that was, Dale, I just want to stop and thank you for being the honorary chairman and spokesperson for National Hunting and Fishing today. And you had your daughter, Isla, on there. And that was classic. And
catching the fish?
Yeah, and just catching fish, because that's bigger than a trophy or anything. I mean, that was the best. That was just best.
Yeah.
She's grinning ear to ear, and you being her dad. And fishing's all about memories and hunting. It's more than the trophies.
That was a very special day. I remember going, and when me and Kelly went to live at Dad's house, we moved in with him. He lived on the Lake Norman. I remember immediately digging in a styrofoam cup for worms to fish off the pier and the boat slip and catching brim after brim after brim and just having a blast, right? Mm-hmm. As a little, 8, 9, 10-year-old boy. And it just dawned on me one day. I was like, I can go do that right now with my daughter. Why don't I just do that? I can go do that right this minute. And I remember that was a great experience for me, and I bet she will – think this is pretty interesting, you know. And her reaction, I was like, please, some Brim, please bite this hook, please. You know, we put it down in there, and she's sitting there, and she's like, what are we doing? What is this? What is happening? And I'm like, just wait, just be patient. And then the bobber starts moving. I'm like, watch that bobber, watch it, look at it. And she's just starting to figure it out, right? We pull that fish out of the water. She could not believe there's a real fish on the end of that line.
Right after you did that, we hosted the National or the Bass Fishing Hall of Fame dinner up there in Springfield. And so I played that little film
did
clip.
Did you?
And then I had another film clip of my granddaughter. I call her, nickname her Angel Fish, but she was out fishing with her dad. Same thing, little perch like this. She puts it in the net and said, Dad, I want to take this home and feed everybody. Yeah.
I think me and Isla will be fishing for quite a while now. But so my dad was always into fishing and always, you know, trying different lures, and he had an affinity for topwater lures for whatever reason. When you, of all the products that you are aware of and have been involved in and have put in your stores, like I'm gonna give you a rod and reel and I'm gonna give you one lure, what lure are you picking off the shelf?
Yeah, it's hard to beat a good old spinner bait.
Yeah,
and I love those frogs too, scum frogs, and like when depending where you fish, you know. Yeah. If they're up shallow, I like spinners and scum frogs, whopper ploppers.
Whopper plopper.
So, hey, talking about your dad just a minute, I was thinking about this. My favorite quote about fishing is from Ernest Hemingway, and he said years ago, he said, in a lifetime spent fishing, I've come to realize it's not the big fish that you catch, but the people that you meet and the friends that you make along the way that matter the most. Mm-hmm. And it's memories outdoors and just along my journey to meet your dad. And I was rereading the beautiful tribute you wrote about your father. Mm-hmm. After he passed and calluses on his hands and what friendships meant to him. It was so beautiful. And I've been blessed my life to be around a lot of people, influential people and presidents, a lot of folks, and through fishing. Your dad, I can just tell you, I don't have to tell you, but he was, my admiration for him was so deep and respect, and what an inquisitive mind. I mean, yeah. he, I'd see him probe people, and you have too, like 100 times, like you could be the chairman of Purdue Foods, and he'd be having him scratching his head about why is he raising chickens this way, or me. Yeah. I didn't think I knew anything about sporting goods. He just was so inquisitive and so genuine, and it's just on my mind coming here. Like, I remember one time he came up. He was supposed to visit at headquarters, stop by for an hour. He ends up going to the warehouse. He spent all afternoon. He wouldn't leave until he was nice to everybody. And I've seen, you know, I think about this. I'm drifting off from your questions. But I just got to say, you know, I've seen you too. It's not easy, I wouldn't imagine, being in the footsteps of such a famous of American hero, you know, and how you guys wear that, how you handle that from ever since I've known you from your father's passing, like how you carry on and hold yourself and make everybody proud to carry on a sport you love. But I'm stuttering for words, but you too, your company, your work family, it means so much to the whole country in many ways. And
thank you.
Just to be around your dad and just gain admiration for him.
Yeah. So how did you get introduced to dad and RCR in that relationship? Because that was kind of your foray into racing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I brought you a little gift because I know you just had a birthday not too long ago, right?
Yeah. So, a couple days ago.
Yeah. So here you go. This was our first, I just found this out coming down here. It's checked on. It was 25 years ago.
Oh, man.
So we sponsored that.
The gold car.
Yeah. And
then, another diecast for the table.
No kidding.
And then, Dale, I got to tell everybody, you introduced us to Martin Truex Jr.
Yeah.
And that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so this and that works out pretty keen. So all this, but yeah, so I met your dad and Richard at Charlotte, best I remember, the first time. And like they sent this sales guy, Bill Patterson, was up on our, calling on us at Bass Pro in Springfield like the next week. And he walks in and he says, Johnny, Dale and Richard, they enjoyed meeting you and they love the outdoors. They both love to hunt and fish and they want to, they're making you this deal. I can't even believe it. And you probably heard me say this before, but there's a chance to put a little decal on the B post of your dad's car. And so what's a B post? Well, I found that out. It's a little decal this big. And I said, man, what's that going to cost? And he told me, and I just about threw up. And then he said, this is a beautiful thing. He said, Johnny, Dale and Richard, they want to put Bass Pro Emblem on the hood of this car for the All-Star race. And they will donate all their royalties that they normally get, and you guys pick, will donate it all to conservation. And so I was totally naive, but that's what really got us into NASCAR. In like 30 days, that was many years ago, they sold over $10 million worth of course, Earnhardt's.
Yeah, you guys, that like, sold a lot a of huge stuff.
Part, but like so much money for conservation, but also told all of us, you know, our customers like that like to hunt and fish, they also like NASCAR, yeah. Huge. And so we look at this as a long-term like brand building or affiliation with NASCAR, and it's, besides that's a lot of fun. Everybody in the company, I get fired up about it.
Yeah.
So was this the first? Was yep. that it? This yep. was the first yep. race car yep. and sponsorship.
Wow. What did you know about NASCAR before this?
Well, I used to go to the Springfield Fairgrounds, and there was a guy named Larry Phillips. Mm-hmm. I asked your dad, he knew him, but he was like the equivalent.
He's a legend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was great. And he'd just go, I'd go there with my grandpa, and that Larry Phillips, he was in Rusty Wallace race there, and quite a few guys, Ken Schrader. Anyway, but yeah. that was my first time being around NASCAR, but it was a half-mile asphalt traffic like you do with the yeah. historical tracks.
The partnership between you and Dad was perfect in many ways. You know, y'all definitely created a friendship and an admiration for each other. But Dad, his passion for fishing and hunting, I know you spend your life around, you know, people that do that professionally, that every day they wake up. But for the every man, you know, Dad was as die hard as it gets. A great connection and a great spokesman for your brand because of his he grew up on lakes around Kannapolis and when hunting season started, he was gone.
Yeah.
He was gone.
And people know that. Customers like, you're right, because like, who's your ambassador? You could win every race and hack off half your customers, you know?
Yeah.
But not with, you know, somebody that's so genuine. Same with Martin yourself. Right. Like, just love it. And yeah. Our customers know that.
I agree. I've tried to, you know, Martin to me is, you know, such a perfect match for Bass Pro Shop. Because he's as dedicated as Dad ever was to deer hunting, loves to fish as well. I mean, they're kind of, if anybody was Dad's equal in my eyes in terms of being an outdoorsman, Martin was the perfect, you know, person for Bass Pro Shop. You know, you talk about how that matters and to your customers, and you talked about conservation being an important trigger for getting you guys involved in Dad's relationship, but. Since that, like, you've been involved in NASCAR for decades now, right? How do y'all value your involvement? How do you how does it have to make sense, right?
I think it's long-term brand building. And Dale, you asked me a question. A lot of our fishermen, when we first started in the NASCAR, they said, Johnny, we could be sponsoring more fishing tournaments. I said, we need to cross-pollinate here, and how can we bring more people into fishing and hunting? And so if kids watch NASCAR, they're around the track or on TV, and they see Dale Jr.'s got a big Bass Pro Emblem. If fishing's cool with Dale, then, it's cool with me. I want to try this. So yeah. I think it cultivates for the whole sport, but also our brand. And our brand's really everything for long-term. Like short-term, the money we invest in NASCAR, we could print more catalogs or do something else, and we'd see short-term gain. But our brands are real important to us, and it's a way to put our brand out there in front of a lot of people and a lot of people that are passionate about outdoors.
Yeah.
It just dawned on me. I don't know why I didn't make this connection, because I thought that you guys were involved a lot longer, but really just three short years with Dad, from 98 till the time of his passing. What was your relationship like? You got a favorite memory? You got a funny story, that something you guys did together or whatnot?
Well, I remember one time he came over with, went fish. I love to fish for these giant bluefin tunas, and your dad came over and we went tuna fishing, and we had a couple of blow-ups, but we never got a fish, but we had good times. And I remember your dad, we were staying in this little fish camp, and they had some bicycles. And I look up, and he's riding his bicycle around backwards. All the time. And he said, "Oh, come on, I'll race you. You can go forward, I'll go backwards."
Yeah.
He still beat me.
The conservation part is very important. You mentioned that in the story of with your grandfather and the lake that was built around your home, and how you learned about how that was beneficial to the environment and wildlife around that area. And you've made conservation sort of like the key mission for you in your life. Every time I've been around you, you mention it in every speech, in every conversation. Try to help people that are listening understand why that is so important to you and why it's so critical to our future.
Thank you. So, yeah, I feel so blessed in my life to be around the outdoor industry. It all comes around the quality of fishing and hunting. One aspect, we benefited from it, so it's our obligation to give back. One thing's but also it's a shared passion. A lot of people in our company realize this. And you came up to the Fish and Wildlife Museum. One of the main missions there, and I think we have, is to share the story of the role that sportsmen and women play in conservation. Since the days of Roosevelt and Audubon, they were hunters, they were outdoorsmen. Through being connected to nature, being in the field or on a stream, they understood the importance more of habitat, of regulations to ensure healthy populations of fish and wildlife. A lot of people aren't aware of this, but over 80% of the funding for all the state fish and wildlife agencies come from sportsmen and women. They are derived from the sale of hunting and fishing license. Mm-hmm. But also, most people aren't aware of this, and I'm proud to just share it with everybody that's listened to this podcast. There's a 10% federal excise tax that sportsmen and women lobbied for that's collected on the sale of all fishing equipment, firearms, ammunition, most hunting supplies. 10 to 11% is collected at the federal level, and it's remitted back to the states based on a formula. So between licenses and that federal tax, sportsmen and women are paying a huge amount of the funding for conservation in America, and it impacts all of North America, in many instances beyond that. So I just think and it's what I call common sense conservation and not just extreme things. And so anyway, those are, I think, passions we share where we came from. Last year was our 50th anniversary, and we shared in our catalog for the first time. The last decade, we've averaged giving back 10% of our earnings back to conservation. It's something that all of us in the company are very proud of. But I think we look at it, too, like NASCAR. It's an investment, for our business, for the future of the sports we love, but also for the future of our company.
Yeah.
I've had the chance to see a lot of the conservation, the work that you've done, and I would encourage anybody listening to check it out, look it up, we don't have the opportunity to talk about every single thing, but I've been to Big Cedar Lodge, I've been to Dogwood Canyon National Park, which is just amazing, Big Cedar's there at Table Rock Lake. If people were to just go there and just see the massiveness of what you have preserved and kept, and the museum there. I mean, it's just incredible. You have that big mammoth, woolly mammoth?
Yeah,
is that what
yeah,
it is?
Yeah.
It's just absolutely incredible when you go there. And that's when I knew, could see it for the importance of all of that. It's just crazy.
So the story I heard, you were building, you have this resort.
Yeah, I want to go. I want to talk about that. That so the sinkhole.
You have this resort that you're building. Is it true that you discovered some fossils while building the golf, building some portion of this resort? There was some discovery that you were like, "Oh, stop everything. Let's get the the experts in here and sort this out. Let's let this all has a process that has to play through." Am I telling this story correctly?
Well, a little bit. So we had a little irrigation lake on a golf course. It's a little place top of the rock. It's a beautiful view in the Ozarks, overlooks Table Rock Lake. There's a number three flag. Always been
flies
there.
Flies every day.
Yeah. So anyway, this irrigation lake, it drains out. So in Missouri, we have it's called karst topography, or a lot of limestone. It's Missouri is also referred to as a cave state. So I'm nuts about spelunking, going in caves and looking around. So where this little irrigation was, I go out there one morning, it's just gone. And there was a little sinkhole and the lake flushed out. It was maybe just a couple acres. But it flushed out this cave that we found about 15 years before. So, man, I know these places are connected. So we start digging to try to find out where this sinkhole, does it lead into this cave? And we found the water when it flushed out to the other cave. So it got to be connected, whether it's through a little foxhole corridor or giant cavern. So we started digging about 7 years ago, and we're still digging.
You're still digging.
But it's amazing. We call it the Cathedral of Nature today. But it's like geologists said, it was formed like 320 million years ago. The walls were about 250 feet deep now. And we've got to figure out a tour how we get people down in there. But it's really beautiful.
And don't you also have means where people are out looking for other relics and fossils and whatnot, don't out in that area? Am I right?
No, just not necessarily.
Oh, but I thought some of the things from the museum were things all, that from were the area, yes. From that area. Yeah, okay, got from it. The, yes. Okay, so they're just
so to me
from
about that
area.
Little museum. It's in a lot of Native
that's
American
not
artifacts,
a little museum.
But like, but anyway, it's to pass on the heritage and like the way of life, and part of it's hunting. Like I have a great reverence for like Native Americans, and they lived off the land. And they had to practice some conservation, right? Because and to be just have a little handmade arrowhead and a stick, and they got to survive with this, you know, like
it's incredible.
That museum. So, what's the square footage of the museum?
Well, there's one is down there atop the rock. It's probably 3,000 or 4,000 feet. It's not giant, but then the one in Springfield is very large. It's like 500,000 or something.
Right. So you opened this up a handful of years ago to big fanfare. We were lucky enough to be able to go
through it. Thank you for coming.
Incredible museum. Just insane. What was the – all right, I know the reason why you built this, but the pure cost of putting something like that together and the monumental task of maintenance and upkeep and just – the whole process. I mean, it must have been a dream. You must have been thrilled to take it on, right? To create this vision for the museum, but it must have been daunting and overwhelming at the same time, because it's there's nothing like it, I don't think, in the country for people that are, you know, that are interested in hunting and fishing and conservation, but also a bit of a history lesson on our land and our country.
I felt the timing was really right, Dale and Kelly, because we have these partners, our conservation partners, these groups, Ducks Unlimited, Wild Turkey Federation, all these groups, on and on, Audubon. So to have these relationships where they could help us create the storylines. What are the messages? What are the success stories that we've had in America in conservation? And also, what are the alarm signals, or what do we need to be watching? So we hope this, especially for young people, you got to bring Island or little sister sometime come back. But it's like passing on this hunting and fishing heritage and current up-to-speed messages about conservation. So we had the conservation partners, and then a group of very talented people that help us with the dioramas and the visual display in our stores, and other talented people that we work with that are just freelance. So we had this nucleus of people, and I felt like, man, we got to tell this story. And so it's all in a foundation, and we chipped in on it pretty heavy, and other donors. But it's I just felt like, man, one thing we could do is pass on our heritage, where we came from.
Is it serving that purpose well?
Yeah, I think so. We've been having attendance over 1 million people a year, just over 1 million for Springfield. And so, yeah, we have a classroom there for fifth graders called the Wolf School. And it's all year long, but they do broadcast there. And they go pretty much across the United States and some degree around the world. And our conservation partners have messages, and it goes out into classrooms so kids can learn about the environment and all really kinds cool. of animals and fish.
That's awesome.
Yeah, if
That's
you haven't really been cool. to the museum in Springfield, it's a must-see
experience.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah. I want to ask you, too, the store, the model of the typical Bass Pro store is not your, it's not your sporting goods store from the 80s or the 90s. It's an experience. You know, you talked about the archery range and in Concord, the giant, every one of them has a giant aquarium. What, how did that vision evolve over time to be able to get to where, like, I can walk in a Bass Pro shop and be entertained, learn about products, find something that I don't have that I want, find what I'm looking for. But, I mean, you literally have to force yourself to leave.
Except at some places where you have hotels.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's you
can
re-envisioned the shopper's experience in those stores, and y'all continue, like, to add more bells and whistles, right? Whose idea, where did that idea come from? Outside, I mean, why not just, you know, here's your lures, here's your ammo, your firearms, here's your camo, here's some rods and reels on the wall in the back. What made you get to the point to where you were really kind of wanting to change the experience for the shopper?
Well, it goes back to that field trip to L.L. Bean, seeing them track to people. I spent 2 years, and many times my sister Susie go, but we traveled to every sporting goods store we could hear of around the country. I went to Germany, Sweden, Europe, looking at sporting goods stores to get ideas.
Really?
And other grocery stores. But then, too, over the years, we've tried to make each store a tribute to the region or the area, like our artist. We have in-house artists. We have our own fab shop that does metalwork for chandeliers, for just craftsmen, you know, to make cases out of wood, log fabrication. And our team, before we open the store, they'll go out and they'll study nature features of an area and the history. We try to engage customers, and sometimes they'll donate mounts or memorabilia things from the region to try to make each store a little bit unique and celebrate the history of a region and not just be, you know, a cookie cutter.
That's funny you talk about the mounts, because I had a buddy of mine, a friend, that I hadn't seen in about 5 or 10 years. I mean, just a buddy from Mooresville that I used to drink beer with years ago, called me up and goes, his dad had just passed away a year or two ago, and he's like, my dad passed away, and he's donated a mount to the Bass Pro Shops in Concord. He's wondering if he could get it back, and they were nice. They were like, yeah, come get it. But I didn't.
All have signs in them, donated by such and such.
So it's kind of fun. So our first inspiration for aquariums, we got in my dad's liquor store. We got an 8-foot diameter underground gas storage tank. We cut a 4-foot window in it. We asked our customers, okay, bring in big bass or big crappie. And it worked out great for the bass, but the crappie, the bass ate them all.
Oh, yeah.
Guys that bring, but anyway, it's just said that people were fascinated to see fish in an aquarium, and now we have, you know,
giant aquariums.
Like fishing instruction in them and things.
What is next? What do you want in a store that you don't have?
This more fun stuff.
More fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, we travel around with Wyatt, my son, and usually, I mean, if there's a Bass Pro Shop there, we go there for the whole experience.
Yeah.
L-Dub wants to walk around and look for,
look,
the next item.
Oh, man.
But Wyatt runs through there and goes to the archery place or whatever
it is. That
is
an interesting point, too, because we've been in many stores around the country, and they don't all feel the same.
No.
They all have that local vibe to them.
You mentioned Wyatt. Now, I get chills. In the company meetings, I replay a race you sent me, or LW, a Wyatt starting in the back and great racing against men and just blowing their ear. This flashback of his uncle and his grandpa, you know, it's unbelievable.
I think we wanted to kind of talk about just your effect in our sport. You know, we did talk about there briefly with your relationship with Dad and then moving on to Martin Truex and sponsoring him, but you know, Austin Dillon up at RCR, you have and then, you know, recently here with Noah Gregson when he ran for Junior Motorsports and supporting him, and you've continued to support us with Josh Berry, and now he's moving on to the Cup Series, and we have a young racer named Carson Quapel in our late model car who's pretty much a wheel man, and my son Wyatt. So you've had a hand in a lot of relationships in this sport and young drivers. What how does that make you feel?
It's a lot of fun, and it reminds me of fishing, really. The quality of the people in the racing community, and how down for most part, I mean, you get all characters from every sport, but I mean, compared to many other athletes, I'd say, or something like the personalities of the racing community, it reminds me of the personalities and the genuineness of people in the fishing community.
I would agree. I think that now, you know, not only have you been a big supporter at the highest level and helped a lot of people, like, you know, Dad and Martin and other people, achieve their dreams and successes on the racetrack, but your involvement in grassroots racing and other levels of NASCAR and allowing people to kind of continue their journeys has been as equally as impressive to me. And I admire people that that understand how important the roots of the tree are. I wanted to ask you, I know that you have a lot of opportunity throughout the year to hunt, to fish. You see incredible places, beautiful parts of our country and the rest of the world. You've had amazing experiences along the way. What is your favorite piece of land to go whitetail deer hunting?
Home in Missouri.
Home in Missouri.
No hesitation. You got to come visit.
No place like home, huh?
Yeah. I love the Ozarks where I grew up and my parents grew up, and I love it there.
Is it all family-owned land that you still have?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, where we spend most of our time, we've got a farm. It's old Peabody strip mine pits.
Yep.
So it was all scarred by man, but it's healed up nature's way, and we try to help it out. But so in these old strip pits turning into some good fishing holes. And
is that the same answer for if you're going to go fishing for a couple hours, where are you going to go?
Yep. I'd say either right there at Table Rock at home or up north where our farm is.
Yeah.
Take grandkids. So we got grandkids now. My son, JP, told me to tell you hi.
Yep.
And Kelly just told us a couple of weeks ago they're expecting a little
That's
baby
so
boy.
Exciting. So exciting.
Yep.
Grandkids, six. How many grandkids you got?
Eight.
Eight.
Oh,
yeah.
Eight coming.
My God.
We'll make
no
eight.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's a awesome. Big family, man. All right, man. Well, so I guess, you know, what's next? Like, what's the future involvement for you in NASCAR? Just status quo, continue. You know, Martin is getting, you know, Martin's going to give us another year, right? He continues to. I want Martin to race for a really long time, but he keeps dragging us on
year by year,
right? But I mean, you know, your involvement in the sport has been there, you know, been there for a long time. I imagine that you're going to continue to find ways to integrate your brand into NASCAR and continue that, you know, that crossover, cross-pollination that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I hope so. It provides a lot of energy and a lot of fun for everybody in our company and our customers, and like I said, building our brand and having fun along the way. So,
yeah. How many employees do you have overall? Because you have Tracker Boats, you have Hatteras.
My God.
Big Cedar. Yeah. You also started, which we didn't get to touch on, the Tracker Off-Road. So purchasing from, who was that, Bad Boy Buggies?
And Textron.
And Textron, right, and yeah.
It's a partnership.
How many employees in total, everything?
We have, and this astounds me where we came from, we have a little over 40,000 team members today, plus our independent boat dealers that are kind of like a part of our family, you know, and many of them are exclusive with our brands and our boats. Most of them are built in the Ozarks, and a lot of now generations of people working in these plants that have so much pride in what they do. That's makes me right. really proud of everybody.
That made me think when you were talking about the Bass Pro Shops and having that local, that local flair to wherever you are, I imagine that also creates the relationship with the employees, because they appreciate that, right? And that the employees that work in those stores, is that helpful to, because it's really hard, especially in the last several years, just to get that dedicated employee, you know? So I imagine that also helps.
We'd like to think so.
Let's talk about the Pyramid store. That was pretty ambitious. There's a Pyramid.
It was where the basketball team played.
In Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis.
And it was a sports arena. I mean, this is a giant space, even for Bass Pro standards. Apparently, the story goes that you were fishing in the shadow of that pyramid, all right, with Bill Dance and Jack Emmett. Is that true?
That's totally true.
And you said, they challenged you. They said, if we catch a 30-pound fish, you're going to buy the pyramid and put a Bass Pro Shop in there.
Well, here's those. So the city owned this building, right? A big space.
It's huge.
And it's kind of a scary deal, like bet the farm on this. And like, not only that, the city owned the building. They came to, they had a commission to study, and the consultants recommend maybe talk to Bass Pro, put a store in there. So I go down there with my boy JP, and it's hot, sunny, you know, summer day. We're hiking all the way up to the top on these stairs. But man, for a daydreamer, like, is a big box. I mean, what a space, 52 million cubic feet, you know, the
right.
space. And so we started thinking, what could we do with this? And we thought, man, we'll just create like the Delta Flyway, big cypress trees, and put like some hotel rooms, like the Opryland Hotel with balconies looking out. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to it, and we struck this deal with the city. We either got to go for it or not. And, man, I was real emotional about it. So Bill Dance, our buddy, you know, he said, Johnny, come down to school catfishing. And other guy, Jack Emmett, was our first fishing manager we ever had. The three of us were in a boat. And I just, that day, I said, guys, look, we got to make, and president of our company at the time, he's calling me, said, Johnny, the press is coming. We got to announce today. Are we doing this or not? I just told Jack and Bill, I said, if we catch a catfish over 30 pounds, is it, you know, sometimes you can flip
you flip
a coin
the quarter,
on
you just
something.
Caught a fish.
So, like, instead of flipping the coin, if we catch a catfish over 30 pounds, this is meant to be, we'll do it. So, Jim, our president, he calls me. He said, Johnny, are we doing this or not? He calls me at 10 in the morning. I kept putting him off. Finally, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, he said, John, this is ridiculous. People are coming at 3. Are we doing this or not? And I'm stuttering around, you know, and about that time, old Jack's half asleep in the back, and his rod starts banging. I said, Jim, I don't know, but it's looking real promising. I'll call you right back. that's a true story, so help me. And because I was really torn to do it or not.
Yeah.
Jack caught that fish, and we did it, and it's worked out great for the city and for us.
Yeah.
But that's a true story about catching that fish.
That is cool. So you caught a 34-pound fish, and that was it.
And that was it.
You mentioned JP being there with you when you went through that building. I often see him by your side in a lot of the moments that we've met, and when I've even went to see you at a store or what have you. How involved is he in helping you with some of the more personal decisions that you have to make for this for this on this journey of creating this business?
Him and his sisters are very important. John is like our number one ambassador to stand up for our customers. And we have a lot of sharp people, backgrounds come into the company from different walks of life, different skill sets. Few, if any, have the passion and the knowledge firsthand to relate directly to our customers because they're so involved in fishing and, in John's case, hunting. So I think he's an advocate. I know he's a strong voice for our customers. Yeah. And so he's involved quite a bit in that. He's passionate to get – I just spend hours, like, working on a catalog page. He said, Dad, no, we got to go online. We got to – like you having your podcast. Yeah. There's different ways to communicate with people, but he's my buddy. I was showing LW before we came in here, my screensaver on my phone's a photo of me and John out in the woods with two – turkeys that we took during the when the virus hit and thought the world's coming to an end. Our whole family was just staying in this little cabin. My wife Jeannie, John, his wife Kelly now, sister, her husband, the kids, grandkids, me and some of the grandkids. And it was during turkey season that April, and John guides me and we got these two turkeys and he put his camera up on a stump and took a selfie of us. And a few months later, I said, John, let me borrow your phone. And he handed me his phone, and it was that picture of us. And that he had picked that out for his sake. I said, can you put that on your dad's phone, too? Right. So, I mean, he's my best buddy in the outdoors and sharing life. Yeah. And thank you for asking.
I remember walking through the museum, and he's in there, right? You know, he's a lot of the mounts and a lot of the experiences that he's been able to – you know, enjoy, were a parent, and that was a lot of fun. I admire y'all's relationship, and I admire your ability to raise a really sharp man, but at the same time be his friend, because that's a tough balance as a parent, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to have a friendship, but that respect always still being there, and y'all have done that perfectly.
Well, I'm very proud of my family, my son. I did listen to Hank Parker's podcast mm-hmm. when he was here, and it was very powerful, beautiful. And he shared in there openly, like, sometimes your dad and just being able to share his love for you guys. And I was reminded because I think I told you this maybe years ago, Dale, but I told your dad. So I'm sitting around. My dad came from a pretty rough way, you know, and as far as not having much, but it was not till after I was 21. He was just, it was old school, you know, strict. And he never used the love word. I mean, it was there, but he didn't never say.
Yeah.
I mean, he just wasn't, he didn't say, we didn't say love you to each other. It was there, but I mean, just, so this one night after I was 21, he never would let me drink in front of him. But we weren't drunk, but we just had a drink by a campfire. I was sometime after I turned 21. And my dad, that evening around a campfire, he chose to share with me, not looking for sympathy, but he just wanted me to know more about himself, like where he'd come from. And he shared with me things I never knew. I knew he was in the Army, but I didn't know how rough. And he told me about going off and being in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. And he looked to me through the smoke, you know, and he said, son, your dad's lucky to be here across the fire from you. And I said, what do you mean? He started telling me about all the young people that didn't fare as well as he did. On so anyway, he shared with me several things that were, he had a rough time cutting firewood all winter, and some son of a gun, I cleaned that up, stole it, and just little things, big things, but just more about his life he wanted to pass on. And we got up from that fire, and I looked at my dad, and I said, Dad, I said, I sure do love you. He looked me right back. He never hesitated, and he said, son, you won't know the true meaning of the word love until and unless you're lucky enough you have your own kids. And that, when John Paul was born, like, I don't know how many years later, but quite the first, it came rushing back to me.
Yeah.
I know you both get to enjoy that, being parents, and what a special thing that is. And
Bam.
To me today here, this is about, more than anything, it's about family traditions. Mm-hmm. You know, like whether it's racing, fishing, outdoors, and just hugging each other.
That's pretty powerful.
That is
Man,
powerful.
What a great moment.
Yeah.
Thanks
yeah.
for sharing that with us. Yeah, he told you that he loved you and more. In with those eloquent words.
Yeah.
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 Pretty amazing. And then, you know, that's kind of cool because then he gave you this gift when you became a parent.
Yeah.
That the memory comes back.
Yeah.
I don't know how to top that one. I really appreciate you giving us some time today. It's been pretty amazing, to get to know you over all these years. I've always appreciated you for, being genuine and being accessible. We have a lot of people that get involved in our industry and a lot of businesses and organizations that invest and we're very thankful for all of them. But your ability to be within arm's length at all times as an individual in front of your brand is so nice. To be able to call you in. I mean, you talked about the 40,000 people that you're managing their livelihoods, you know, and risking your business every single day to give us a few hours to come in here and sit down means a lot to me and Kelly. Your relationship with our dad, the fact that three flag flies on the top of that mountain and that's important to you. I can't tell you what that means to me, and I'm sure Kelly feels exactly the same way. All these years later, you always kind of worry about your father's impact on the industry or his impact on others will be soon forgotten. Just time has a way of melting away.
Yeah,
yeah. That force that he was. And you're one of those people out there that are telling his story today. And continuing to fly that flag on that mountain is just a very, very cool thing.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Feel blessed I got to know your dad.
Yeah.
He's a heck of a man.
Yeah.
He's brave for fine kids.
Never so proud to walk into the Daytona Bass Pro Shop many years ago and see the picture of dad there, fishing. And, I mean, just all of those kinds of things. Very relational.
Yeah.
You're very down-to-earth, humble, relational.
That's right.
Person. Relationships.
So, yeah. So we want to say thanks. Thanks for coming and talking to us a little bit.
Thank you.
Love to have you come back.
Yeah.
It's very special to get to be here with you guys today. Very special. Thank you so much.
Same here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. Johnny awesome. Morris on the Dale Jr. Download. Man, I'm really excited to have Ally help us bring the guest segment every week. It's one of my favorite parts of the download. We get to talk to so many different people in racing, outside of racing. But everybody that comes in here, I want them to have had a good time. I want them to want to come back. I want them to feel like an ally to Dirty Mo Media. Thank you, Ally, for your continued support of the download and the entire Dirty Mo Media team. Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.